May it please the court, Chris Steves on behalf of Joe Reinagle and Joy Reinagle.
All right.
Your Honor, this is a 12B6 dismissal of a case involving really a matter of standing to sue under Texas foreclosure law. The matter at issue, as decided by Judge Hudspeth, is that he found our clients had not adequately presented a claim on which relief could be granted based upon allegations that there was not a valid transfer of the note and deed of trust between the original mortgagor of the property, Argent Bank, and Deutsche Bank, who initiated the foreclosure proceedings. Under Texas law, there are two documents that are critical to a mortgage. First, the note, which is a personal liability, and the second is a deed of trust. Standing to challenge those documents as transfers as being void is long recognized under Texas law, and I don't think there's a dispute here as to that with regard to whether there is a void transfer of the documents. What Judge Hudspeth in this case held on to was the fact that there was not allegations that the transfer at issue was void or invalid. There have been a number of cases brought by pro ses to this court as well as in the district court under a theory that the bank need to produce the actual note, called a show me the note theory. We are not asserting that. What we are asserting is that they need to show that they are the legal owner of the note, the legal party that has the right to foreclose on the property. We are also not contesting that the mortgage electronic service, whereby the bank itself doesn't do the transfers, there's this electronic company that serves in between to do these, could not make the transfers. What we are alleging is that the parties who actually signed the transfers between Argent, the original mortgage holder, and Deutsche Bank, the party that initiated the foreclosures, did not do so properly. And in this case, what you had was a gentleman, as alleged in the petition, that was named Brian Bly. And his is the really critical transfer, which was done in 2009, because Mr. Bly's transfer allegedly affected both the note and the deed of trust. And under Texas law, we assert that they had to be holder of the note as well as the deed of trust in order to have the right to foreclose. The allegations with regard to Mr. Bly are very well spelled out in our petition, in that Mr. Bly would sign documents electronically or just sign documents, and that those documents were then later notarized. He has admitted in a deposition in Florida, and that is alleged in our petition, that there was notary fraud here. Additionally, we asserted that filing a document, and that's a critical distinction here, that these documents are filed in the deed records of the state of Texas, that filing a fraudulent document is a criminal activity that is against public policy in the state, as well as the fact that the document itself, as explained in our reply brief, because they first challenged this at that point, was that it was actually a forged document because it was not a representation of the act that was not executed at the time and place that it was represented to be. It was not the actual original document, though it purported to be, and it was the act of someone else that did not authorize the act. We've also asserted that the individuals who did this were not who they represented themselves to be. Mr. Bly, we allege, was a employee of Nationwide Title Clearing when, in fact, he was a vice president of City Residential Lending. Ms. Reynolds also executed a transfer of the deed of trust in this case, and that was done in 2008. And we don't know why there were two documents trying to effectuate the transfer. But once again, Ms. Reynolds said she was the authorized agent of Argent when executing the document, when in fact we have alleged that she was not with Argent, not with MERS, but with City Financial Residential Lending.
But to the extent you're arguing that the act was fraudulent, representing the authority, I thought under the Marcus case in the Texas Supreme Court that would simply mean that perhaps the matter, the question of authority the corporation itself could deny that authority, but it's their option, and it's not the borrower's option to deal with that.
Well, Your Honor, what you're getting to is the void versus voidable distinction in terms of the chain of command and what we can challenge. And we understand that based upon the law, a pure capacity challenge would not be really something we'd be comfortable saying to the court was void. What the distinction here is that unlike a corporate resolution between some parties, these are documents that are filed of record within the state of Texas,
Let me interrupt you. We say that Texas law is settled that the obligors of a claim may not defend against an assignee's effort to enforce the obligation on any ground which renders the assignment voidable only. You agree with that principle?
Yeah, I agree with the voidable principle.
Now, why does that rule not apply here?
Well, there are several reasons, Your Honor. First of all, with regard to the key one, which is the assignment of both the note and the deed of trust by Mr. Bly, it was forged. We assert that it was forged.
What was forged?
The actual assignment, because he signed the document himself, and we allege that in his petition he signs the documents, then later gives them to somebody to notarize them. And as you know, with a notarized document, you say, "A prayer's before me with personal knowledge here to sign the document," and represents the persons before the notary. And instead, this was not actually notarized before the notary, but was notarized later.
Well, that doesn't mean the document's void. The notary notarization is an independent proof that event occurred. But that doesn't mean that the actual person didn't really sign it.
Well, there are also allegations that
you're
elected.
You're not saying that the person who signed the name, whatever the name was not that person.
Well, there are allegations made with regard to Mr. Bly that...
You say that the record will show that Mr. Bly did not sign it, nor did he authorize anyone to sign it for him?
What he did was simply scan his signature. This is the actual allegation.
Scanning is okay. I didn't understand you really quarrel with that.
Well, he would sign, not the document. He would sign his name.
Well, if he signed it, that's good under the law.
Well,
the notary is not going to render the document void.
Our allegations go to the fact that you can't present a document of record in the state of Texas that is not that's fraudulent, that's a lien.
Well, fraudulent means that it's not what it purports to be. And what it purports to be is a deed of trust signed by the person that signed it. If that's in fact true, then it may be defective and it may prove difficult as a proof in some other context, but it's still a deed of trust that your client is a party to, and on its face would be enforceable.
Well, what forgery is under Texas law, it goes beyond just falsely signing for someone else. It says that it was represented to be...
Let me clear what you mean, but I thought you said that the person whose signature was there either signed it or someone signed it for him.
Right.
That can't be forgery. The forgery you're saying is because it was improperly, wasn't notarized.
Well,
in his presence, it violated the notary, didn't do it properly.
Well, the representation means under forgery, it says to be executed at a time and place other than was in fact the case. In other words, if it's not executed at the time and place that it's represented to be executed, which is what he said, that he did not appear before the notary at the time to do the notarization of the document.
I suppose the document wasn't notarized at all.
Well,
but the man signed it on the behalf of the lender.
That is a point brought up by Judge Huspeth, that there is no dispositive law that says it has to be a notarized document. But
well, then why does it doing more than is required void the document?
Because it is filed under the laws of the state of Texas as a document that doesn't purport to be what it is. He presented it as a document that was notarized.
All right, I have the argument. Go ahead. It's not a product persuasion, but I hear it.
The same is true with regard to Ms. Reynolds and that assignment, but that assignment is as critical as the assignment done by Mr. Bly.
Let me ask you something, counsel. In connection with the questions from Judge Higginbotham, is there any difference at all? And I don't want to lead you down a path that you don't want to go, but is there any difference at all between the Texas Penal Code definition of forge and the common law definition of forgery from Nobles? Is there any difference at all? And if so, is there any significance that may have in this case?
I did not study the common law definition of forgery, and I understand Judge Higginbotham's point, which is that if I authorize somebody to sign on my behalf and say I'm here in New Orleans and tell my secretary, sign my name, I need to get this pleading out, if it's signed with my authority, then that's not a forged document. I also understand that, you know, but in these cases, you have issues with people doing multiple different signatures, and really we're at a 12B6 stage. We may discover that this is not true in this case with regard to Mr. Bly's signature. I mean, you know, we're doing, you can only allege what you know, and what you know is what Mr. Bly did as admitted in his deposition in the state of Florida.
Well, you talk about the forgery occurring whether it's presented for recordation. But suppose that you have a deed of trust that's not been recorded. If there's not been any intervening sales or whatever, the recordation, its central purpose is to give notice to others of the lien itself. I wouldn't have never occurred to me that a failure recordation would render the underlying debtor-creditor relationship void.
Well, I mean, if the recordation, I agree, is for formalizing the actual deed of trust, but the difference here is it was actually filed of record, making it the filing of a fraudulent lien because it was not executed.
Well, we don't. The contest here is not between some subsequent purchaser of the property who had no notice and who challenges the effectiveness of the notice by recordation. This is a contest between the creditor and the borrower. And the borrower said, I don't have to pay the bill, although I admit I owe the debt. Because why?
Because if they are not the owner of the debt, then why should they be able to collect on the debt?
I mean, it's just a question of whether or not there's the people who sought foreclosure demonstrate sufficiently that they are the creditor.
And that's if they can demonstrate that, then they'd be entitled to summary judgment in this case. And there are cases where pleadings have been filed and they produce the actual note or produce a good chain of title, particularly in the Wells Fargo Wachovia situations where there was an actual acquisition of the document rather than relying on the note.
Are you drawing a distinction between the first assignment of the deed of trust, which failed to make reference to the note, and then and the later transaction, which transferred the note?
I'm not sure why there were two transactions.
But does it matter?
I mean, well, to keep the note, Texas law recognizes, going back to the West case in the 1920s or 1930s, that you need to keep the note and the deed of trust in the same holder. And the critical thing is that the holder of the note be the party be able to foreclose. So therefore, I mean, the second transfer is really the key, is that's the one they assert transferred both the note and the deed of trust.
Okay.
So you're saying they concede that that first transaction is void. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying they don't concede that either transaction is void. What I think they are would assert to you, Your Honor, is that the second transaction is the transaction that they would primarily rely upon because it transfers both.
Well, I thought under the restatement, the assignment of a deed of trust presumptively includes the assignment of the note. Now, I'm not aware that Texas has rejected the restatement provision or adopted it. But under the restatement provision, if they did nothing but sign the deed of trust, it presumptively is that. And so if you're dealing with, unless you have some defeat
well,
that presumption.
We would respectfully disagree with that and direct the court to the decision
you
by
disagree
judge.
Disagree with the restatement.
There is a presumption. Are you saying the restatement states a presumption?
I'm saying that the restatement provides that the assignment if you have a facial instrument, the assignment of the mortgage itself, it presumptively carried with it the note. It is a refinement by the restatement of the ALI, the underlying reality that without a valid note, you don't have a valid mortgage. And it just says right. That the assignment of the, if I sign you the deed of trust, I presumptively have assigned the note too.
Well, there is a
in
case.
In other words, if I'm going to sign my mortgage, I'm the mortgagee and I'm going to sign it to you,
right.
And I fail to expressly say the note, the restatement will say the note went with it, otherwise I've given you a nullity.
Well, we would direct the court to the Carpenter versus Long and case from the the United States Supreme Court in the 1870s, as well as the West case. I mean, recently, Judge McBride, and I don't have the exact citation I can provide to the court, said that a transfer of the deed of trust without the note is invalid because you have to transfer the note as well. The note is the controlling instrument. So, and here you have what we allege are defects with both the transfer of the deed of trust,
okay.
One, and the deed in the note.
Thank you, Mr. D. Mr. Hastings?
Yes, sir. May it please the court. The issue that we're discussing in this case today is a recurring issue. I hope the court, from reading both sides' briefs, understands that the issue has been addressed by many district courts and is an issue that is continuing to get litigated. And so one thing I wanted to stress at the beginning today is that we believe that we're arguing for the correct rule, but I believe all litigants in the district courts will benefit from a clear rule. Your Honors, also, one quick comment to begin with. We're talking mostly about Texas law here today, and I'm about to start talking about Texas law. But I did want to correct one thing that the appellant said, which is that they said this is purely an issue of Texas law. The issue of standing to challenge a contract also implicates an Article III issue, the prudential issue here of talking about someone else's rights. Challenging a contract to which you're not a party also raises an Article III prudential standing issue. But as the briefing is focused, we've primarily focused on Texas law.
Well, of course that's true. But that begs the question of whether or not the plaintiff's claim is to its own rights and it claims to have been injured, and it's not simply asserting the not violating the prudential premise of making the legal argument belonging to another.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so we're back to it. Really, it's one of these standing questions that in many ways is bound up with the ultimate merits of the case.
Yes, and Your Honor, I think we get to the same conclusion under either approach. With respect to Texas law, also I wanted to correct one statement argument that the appellants have asserted, and that's the idea that the note has to be transferred in order for a party to enforce the deed of trust. That is an issue that had not been raised in the briefing in this case, and so the appellants had not raised it, and we had not had a chance to brief that issue. I would just like to direct the court's attention. There's a recent district court decision from Judge Ezra sitting in the Western District of Texas about a week ago in the case of Calderon versus Bank of America, where Judge Ezra does an extensive discussion of this type of issue and explains why the appellant's argument is just wrong. The ultimate conclusion is whoever holds the deed of trust does have the right to foreclose whether or not the note had been transferred.
Well, and so, I think you'll concede it's just wrong depending on which authority you take a look at. I mean, I think Judge Higginbotham correctly cited what the restatement says, but the fact is there are cases that find to the contrary, aren't there?
I don't believe in Texas, Your Honor. That's an issue of Texas law. And while I don't know, because again, this issue hadn't been briefed and raised by the appellants, I don't know if the Texas Supreme Court.
And is the reason it hadn't been briefed because appellant is correct when he says that you rely on the second transaction. You're traveling under the second transaction. And so if there's anything wrong with a transfer, it's the second one that you're relying on.
That's not correct, Your Honor. We are relying upon both transfers.
All right.
And that is an important point. The point I wanted to make, though, and the reason
so
I
you
cited...
You didn't brief anything regarding the first transaction because...
Because the appellants never argued that the problem was that Deutsche Bank had not received a transfer of the note during the first transaction.
All right.
That was raised for the first time here today. And coincidentally, Judge Ezra had just written a decision last week that I read yesterday that I thought I would call the Court's attention because it explains Texas law and answers that question. Your Honor, I did want to focus on the point, Judge Graves, that you just asked. We are relying upon both transfers. And the record is unclear as to why there were two. We've seen fact patterns where that has happened before, and one can only guess why there was two. But here, the issue of the transfer with Mr. Bly is the second transaction. So before we even get into all these questions about what's a forgery, and Judge Higginbotham, I'm going to talk about what a forgery is in a second. I think your questions at least suggest the correct answer to that question, that the issue with Mr. Bly is not a forgery. But before you even get to that question, the first question is, was the transfer with Ms. Reynolds, is that valid? If that's valid, we don't even have to talk about the forgery issue. Your Honor, it's well-established Texas law that parties do not have the right to challenge the assignments to which they're not a party. Here, for Deutsche Bank to have the right to foreclose, they have to meet the definition of a mortgagee under the Texas Property Code. It's a defined definition, and one of the definitions is the last record title holder of the deed of trust. And if you look at the county property records, which are matters of public record, or just the pleadings in this case, because the appellants have pleaded the transfers, Deutsche Bank meets that definition. They are the entity shown by the property records in Bexar County as the record title holder of the mortgage. That makes them a mortgagee, and they have the right to conduct the foreclosure. Here, there's no dispute that the loan is in default, and that there is entitlement, or the bank does have the right to foreclose. There's no exception to that rule in the Texas Property Code. So what we're talking about here is essentially a party trying to make an exception to what the statute says, but the statute is clear, and that could be the end of this analysis. But the exception that the appellants are asking for is coming from, they're asking for something that's even contrary to the Texas contract law, which is a party that's not party to an assignment has no right to challenge it. The appellants are wrong when they try to argue that the assignments are void. Again, there's no argument being raised with respect to the assignment with Ms. Reynolds that really says it's void. The argument is this note versus deed of trust theory that we're hearing for the first time today. And as I mentioned, that is not the correct theory under Texas law. With respect to Mr. Bly, though, the argument on why the transaction should be void.
Yes. And I hear you with regard to the first transaction, but you have no explanation for the fact that the same entities decided for whatever reason that a transaction that they had entered into, which didn't involve the promissory note, needed to be redone later and include the promissory note. We don't know why, but they decided that they were going to do it again. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, I could speculate as to why, but it's on this record. We're on a motion to dismiss.
And I can speculate as to why. And my speculation would probably be because there was a question about whether or not they really needed to attach that note to the deed of trust. Now, I'm sure your speculation is going to be different from mine. So you go right ahead and speculate.
And Judge Graves, my speculation is, one, it could be just a mistake, or number two, it could be cautious lawyers dotting the I and crossing the T's. And as parties continue to raise the
argument. Cautious with regard to?
But parties, I think when the court goes back and researches the issue, I'd be happy to address this issue if the court would want additional briefing.
It's not good practice to separate the note as such, as a practical matter, whatever be the legality of it.
And Judge Higginbotham, as a practical matter, I think the court is going to see that there are many, many cases in Texas where this argument is raised for that very reason, but they consistently come down to the conclusion that they can be separated, and that does not prevent a problem. Why there was a second assignment, one reasonable explanation is when the parties went to go foreclose, they just wanted to dot the I's and cross the T's, hopefully to head off that argument, not knowing the next argument was going to be, wait a minute, this one's a forgery. And so there's a lot of speculation, but the bottom line is under Texas law, it doesn't matter because the first transfer and assignment was valid. The second one was valid too, though, because the argument of why that one's not valid, it says that Mr. Bly's signature was a forgery. And Judge Higginbotham, I believe you asked about or noted the Nobles versus Morales case from the Texas Supreme Court, which absolutely answers this question. And it says, one who executes an instrument purporting on its face to be executed by him as an agent, when in fact he has no authority to execute such instrument, is not guilty of forgery. That's the end of the forgery discussion for the Texas Supreme Court. And, Your Honor, this court, in Charter Bank versus Evanston Insurance, 791 F. 2nd, 379, wrote the same thing, relying upon the Morales decision. Under Texas law, one who signs his own name does not commit forgery, even when acting as an agent without actual authority. While the agent may be culpable for his fraud, he has not committed a forgery. And, Your Honor, if my memory is correct, Judge Higginbotham, I believe you may have been the author of that decision. And that's correct. That's what Texas law is on forgery. The allegations being made against Mr. Bly don't meet the definition of a forgery under Texas law. So even under their current theory, they have not alleged something that would even begin to make an argument that this document is, in fact, void. And again, that is reason enough why the district court was correct in granting the motion to dismiss. They have not pleaded a viable theory to break the links of the chain. Your Honor, just sort of summing up, the way I see this issue is under the Texas Property Code, the important provision is the last record title holder has the right to foreclose as the mortgagee. And when you go do a title search, the correct way to do it is you start at the beginning of the chain of title, which in a case of a mortgage is you would start with when the mortgage is granted, in this case to Argent. And if you went and did a record title search in Bexar County, you would see the transfer from Argent to Deutsche Bank, and you would see that there's no subsequent transfer to another party. As a matter of Texas law, that makes Deutsche Bank the last record title holder, and under the property code, they have the right to foreclose for a loan that's admittedly in default. What the appellants are trying to do is to break a chain in that title, the chain of title. They're trying to break a link in the chain, and the Texas law is absolutely clear that under the theories being asserted, these allegations of robo-signing and violations of the alleged violations of the pooling and service agreement.
Let me ask a question. Yes. Let me interrupt you for a moment. What was the last payment made by the homeowner here on the mortgage? Were any payments made after the transfers? How do those relate?
Your Honor, I do not know the answer to that question. That is not in the record, and we're here on a motion to dismiss. Discovery had not been conducted in this case, and so I do not know the answer to that question.
Well, if I have a mortgage and somebody signs it, someone else, I get a notice that I have to make my payments hereafter. It seems odd to me that. I just wondered, has this homeowner made any payments at all since then, or is it just the homeowner doesn't get a free house? They know free lunch, and they sure ain't no free house. So I'm just trying to figure out who's getting the money.
Yes.
If anyone.
And Judge Higginbotham, I was wondering the same questions, but since it's not in the record, I didn't want to start speculating or bring in additional materials, because even under this record, my client is entitled to foreclose on this property. Okay. Again, there's no allegation that the loan is not in default.
It's not in the record, fine.
Yes. Your Honor,
but we're here on a 12B6.
Yes, Your Honor.
And not a summary judgment, so that might support an argument that we prematurely aborted all these proceedings below. What do you say to that?
Your Honor, we are here on the pleadings, and on a 12B6, we're entitled to look at the pleadings, the documents attached to the pleadings, which include the assignments, as well as actually take judicial notice of the public record. And when you follow that process, we have an undisputed chain of title from the original mortgagee, Argent, to the current mortgagee, Deutsche. And at that point, when the appellant's theory is trying to allege claims, accusing people of robo-signing and forgery and dreaming up the claims that we keep hearing in the district courts.
Well, you're not denying robo-signing, are you?
Your Honor, I don't believe this is actually a case of robo-signing. And robo-signing is actually an interesting term. The real term of robo-signing refers to something that has nothing to do with signing transfers of assignments. It dealt with a problem where people were signing affidavits, and the allegation was people were signing affidavits that they hadn't personally done the investigation or checking the facts as they're saying what the facts were in an affidavit. We have a simple situation where a company has the right to designate an authorized representative to sign a document, and they can designate one person to sign every document if they like. There's no problem with setting up a policy in place. So actually the use of the word robo-signing doesn't even fit with the argument that's being made here, Your Honor. With respect to the 12B issue, though, the part of the problem...
It doesn't fit with the argument, and we don't know the fact because we got 12B6 yes. Motion.
And we're dealing with just an assignment, Your Honor.
All right.
And that's the distinction. There's no argument that the person signing an assignment has to have some kind of superior knowledge about the whole transaction. They just have to be authorized by the company to sign the transaction. And under Texas law, we believe that this is the clear Texas law we cited in our brief. The appellants, as a stranger to the assignment, do not have the right to challenge the authority of the person who signed the assignment document. If Argent had an issue, Argent would probably be here complaining that this is their loan. There's no dispute. There are no competing claims against the borrower on this particular home. And, Your Honor, with respect to the importance of the 12B process here, banks and courts are getting inundated with this problem. I'm sure the borrowers would probably say they have the same view, you know, from their perspective, but they have a different perspective. There's a lot of litigation going on over a rule that under Texas law is not a viable rule. And before the courts are clogged up with dealing with summary judgments and discovery processes and the banks are forced to incur a lot of legal costs defending against a theory that is legally not viable, the 12B process is the correct way to resolve cases like this. Your Honors, we would ask this court to affirm the district court's decision. And again, since this is a recurring issue, we would hope that the court would see fit to have a published decision explaining the rules to hopefully create some efficiencies for all the parties in the courts involved.
And I heard what you said about clogging the courts, but it's a recurring issue because there are thousands of people who are facing foreclosures. Isn't that why it's a recurring issue?
Your Honor, there are many people facing foreclosures. That is correct. And the reason it's a recurring issue in the courts is people are coming up with theories when there is no allegation to say that they are not in default. You know, it's not a situation where the borrower...
Counsel, you don't disagree that it's a legitimate concern that a homeowner may have as to whether or not they're actually, if they're going to be paying a mortgage to somebody, that they pay it to the person who actually holds the mortgage. Otherwise, they could be faced with the possibility that they pay one alleged mortgage holder and then a second mortgage holder. In this case, we have Argent and Deutsch. Deutsch says, you owe me, and then later Argent says, we never really transferred anything, so you owe me. And that's the predicament that could befall a homeowner in a situation like this. Isn't that right?
Judge Graves.
I know we're speculating about what could happen, but I don't think we can just dismiss these because they may clog up the courts.
And Judge Graves, I'd like to try to directly address that question because I believe I understand the concern that you're raising. And, of course, as I've already stated, this is not the case where you have competing claims to the mortgage. I understand that. I believe the court understands that.
Well, we don't have it yet, but right now there's nothing that would bar Argent from raising a claim.
Your Honor,
they'd be subject to all of the defenses that there was a transfer and all that, but that's nothing that says they can't bring a claim, is there?
And Your Honor, if Argent had a claim, Argent has a right to bring a claim against Deutsche Bank for its recovery. And, Your Honor, if we had a case where a borrower faced conflicting claims from two different mortgagors, and Judge Higginbotham, although I don't have the cites, I believe you were correct in the sense that when a mortgage is transferred, I believe this is actually the federal regulations now, require giving notice of who the parties are that you're supposed to pay. It's required. But if that situation ever developed where two people are making a claim, that they're the ones entitled to be placed.
And in that connection, we don't know whether or not that happened in this case, because again, we're done with this one on a 12B6. I agree with what Judge Higginbotham said, and that's exactly what should occur, and it may actually be relevant on the merits, but in this case, we never got to that because it's 12B6 and it's out.
And the plaintiff,
we don't want to clog up the court.
Your Honor, and the plaintiff has not pleaded that that's what happened. The plaintiff pleaded that claim, we would have a different situation. And if the plaintiff found themselves in a situation where they were undeniably in default of the mortgage, but two different parties were claiming, you owe me a lot of money, that's, first of all, not our case, but if that situation ever arose, the plaintiff is not entitled to keep their home. They're entitled, they're in default.
You know,
they have a remedy of interpleading.
If the plaintiff
time.
Has that problem, they can file a suit for declaratory judgment and tend to make his payments in the court and let the people fight over it. I don't see my question is, anybody really paying this mortgage anywhere?
I think
we know the answer to that.
Your Honor, I think that's right. And the last comment I would say is, if we really had the competing complaints, declaratory judgment certainly would be available. The other option is, if the borrower's in default, they could interplead the title to the home and let the banks fight it out, because somebody's entitled to foreclose on the defaulted note. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hastings. Rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Even though it's not in the record, I do know from my client the last payment was made in July 2011, which is right before this litigation was instituted. The argument made by the banks here is, for years, these documents were easily...
Your last payment was July what?
2011. 2011.
2011. They're still living in the house?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm sure they're putting that money aside to pay somebody the right person.
His argument here relies on the issue of the last title holder. In other words, that they are in the record as the last party to which the documents show that they are owner. But their argument here, as explained in our brief, is if I go down to the courthouse tomorrow and put a deed of trust assignment that says Mr. Deaves is now owner of the property at issue, under their theory, there's no way to challenge that, because I would then be the last title holder, the last recorded person claiming an interest in the property. And it's, while that the statute's there, you have to read the statute logically to say that you have to have a valid assignment or something that would entitle you to be the person that's the last title holder of record.
But in fairness, now, your client didn't go into default on a mortgage payment because they were confused about to whom to make the payments. That's not why it went into default.
They had been working with the banks to try and resolve this issue, and
they were trying to renegotiate their loan, get a better deal, and the forgiveness and all those problems going forward. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sure. Well, I understand that. I'm not criticizing that.
I'm just trying to get the
reality of it. And they were unable to make that deal. Who were they negotiating with?
I believe it was Deutsche Bank, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because at that time they had presented themselves.
They didn't have much doubt about who to negotiate with.
No, Your Honor. But the fact of the matter is for years these documents were easily obtained. The process was clear, and it wasn't until this, and they can call robo-signing what they want to and say that was false affidavit. This is a document signed by an individual electronically and then notarized later on. I mean, the process here for the banks to do these things right is fairly easy, and it was done for hundreds of years until you had these pooled trusts. The court may be familiar with the fact that the banks are being sued for failing to record these deeds in numerous cases, even the required by law. My time's up, Your Honor, if you have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dee.